Hey, Will Arnett, boy, you got a real bright white shirt on today. Kind of matches your teeth.
Thanks.
Do you like what I have on?
Oh, God, what do you call that? What do you call that dirty old tee?
Smart Lad!
Smart.
Hey guys, how are you? Listen, I feel like we just saw each other. Was it last night? No, it was two nights ago.
Two nights ago, we saw each other and...
And Will, you asked me about my car and I said, I'm going to wait to tell you on Monday.
I know Sean said, I said to Sean, because we saw him the other day and his car was looked different. And I said, what happened to your car? Because you had that car that he talked about. Remember he smashed his new car with his driveway because Scotty re-engineered the gates?
To close, yeah. So it's my Audi e-tron, which is my favorite car of all time.
Oh, say it one more time,
let's
clearer.
Let's say it one more time. God.
It really is my favorite car.
Well, Jason and I, obviously, we have no opinion on cars. I mean, other than, you know, GMC, if you're looking for something.
We sure certainly love Range Rovers and Teslas.
So the garage is down. We opened up the garage. There's my car and Scotty's car in there. And it's this massive, horrible smell. And we're like, what is it? It smells like a rotting, like, body or something.
Sure.
So we're like, we looked behind the walls, you know, we looked, like, outside next to the garage. And like, it was weird. Anyway, I was like, well, I'm just going to get in the car and go to my appointment. So I get in the car. Scotty texts me, like, an hour later. He goes, ever since you left, the smell is gone.
Oh, my God. So yes. You're at your appointment. So you're like, hang on. And you said to the guys at the Dorito factory, I got to go. What did you...
The Dorito factory. Oh,
thanks for offering the tour, but I've got to get back home.
I really, and also, I'm already kind of affiliated with the gang over at Chex Mix Bugle, so.
Well, I also thought it was weird that he called me and said, ever since I left, the smell is gone.
Sure.
But anyway, so I got back, and this Audi person came, because they're like on it, and they said, oh, yeah, on a lot of the new electronic cars, a lot of the wires are made of soy. Which is food for animals. So what happened was an animal went in, ate some of the wires, and died.
Really?
Yeah. It was a dead animal.
You know, I once found a rat living underneath the hood of the of one of our cars here in the driveway.
Really?
Just like nestled up in the warm pipes of the engine. A full rat's nest. Like that, apparently this is something that happens.
Up at your current house.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, that's different than eating the wires.
Do you think the rat was still just traumatized by the image of Ernest Borgnine standing in your kitchen jerking off?
Listener, I live in Ernest Borgnine's old house, and Will's convinced that Ernie Borgnine was a famous masturbator.
He talked about it.
I don't think he did. I think you're just being mean.
He said he masturbated every day, and he said he used to.
What?
And you know in the opening when you walk in your house there with the stairway? He said he used to lean against the banister.
Is this a true story, Will, that he's just was a notorious...
That's not true.
He did. He said it in an interview. I'm not making it up.
What do you mean, an interview?
Ernest Borgnine said it in an interview.
How do you know that?
Because I read it one time, because I was looking up who masturbates more than David Bateman.
Everybody.
And it said,
so you're saying that's how I got a deal on this house, that it's a notorious just goo-shack.
He left his mark, that's for sure.
Jack is the term, I think. Let's see. I'm looking it up
are you
right
really,
now.
You're looking up for the article right now?
By the way.
We'll wait, I guess.
BuzzFeed. Ernest Borgnine loves to masturbate.
That's not true.
I swear to you.
Come on.
That's not true.
Bless him.
Wait, what are you talking
about?
The
guy had a healthy, clearly, this guy had enough testosterone for all of us, right?
Wait,
Ernest Borgnine was very feral.
In 2008, he said that the secret to staying young at his old age is masturbation.
Wow. And how old was he when he died?
Oh, Master Bateman. Hang on. What is he saying?
It's right there.
I mean, it's kind of poetic.
He did live in this house for 60 years.
And did he really?
I don't want you to let your imagination get carried away with itself. But that's a lot of time under this roof
for
him.
By the way, I wouldn't bring it up if he had not said it. All due respect to him and to his legacy,
yes,
which is now a little stickier.
Hey-o.
But he's the one who said it, and he was quite open about it.
Well, so. How old was he when he died, Ernest? Does it say there?
What am I, his biographer?
I want to say it was like 90.
He was old. He lived a long time.
Yeah, I want to say he was 90.
Well, there
you go. No, he was already 91 there. How long have you guys been in that house, Jay?
6 years, 7 years?
How old was Ernest Borgnine?
Oh, my God. Granddad is asking Siri how old Ernest Borgnine was.
Oh, my God. He was 95.
Okay.
95.
There you go.
Yeah. So after that interview, you got 4 more years of snapping it off in that house before.
Oh,
Sean, I love watching you Google stuff and ask Siri stuff, and I just think, do you have a robust relationship with Facebook too?
Hey Siri,
you don't need to hold the phone up next to your right on your lips. You don't need to kiss Siri when you talk
like
to her.
That.
No, yeah, just anywhere in the room will do. She can hear you.
Like this, just next foot like this. But
we're going to out our friend Aniston here on that too. She does the same damn thing, except hers is even worse. She'll actually hold the full phone up facing like her nose to the glass.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Faces her. Yeah, yeah.
I don't know why she thinks she's going to get a better answer that way than just kind of just down around the hip.
Sean, when we were doing the bits at Jen's house on the other night with the bag, and then when I had Jen's glasses and I kept taking them off and then cleaning them.
The best.
She doesn't. That's the problem. She doesn't clean them. She doesn't.
Mean,
the number of fingerprints on her glasses is... It's just remarkable she can even see out of them.
Well, they go on, they go off. They go on, they go off. You touch them and you take them off.
We just hold the rim for
doing
that,
bits. It was, God, it was so good.
That was, Will did one of the best bits ever, which was similar to bits I've been doing, but he acted like the purse, I don't know whose purse it was. Let me set it up
by saying this. Sean's bit, which is great, is often we'll be at dinner and somebody will have a handbag like on a table and Sean will come up. He'll come over, grab it, put his arm through it and goes, I'm just running out to the store. Does anybody want anything? And it's really funny.
It never doesn't work.
No, it's always funny.
And then Will took it to the next level, which was actually digging in like you were looking for something.
Well, I would go like this. I'd hold it like this. Then you come in and go, hi. Oh, my God, I was just thinking about you guys. And then I pretend to like look into my bag. Is if I'd had some stuff in there.
It's really funny. I could watch that for 9 hours.
Men,
yes.
You got a real Swiss Army knife with us today.
Wow.
This actor can be funny, dramatic, lead or supporting.
Wow.
I haven't seen him play a woman yet, but I bet it would be convincing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's got all the nominations you could want, all the respect and admiration possible, but even more importantly, a successful marriage and two great kids. Yeah. On the sad side, he can't swim, can't ride a bike, or sleep laying down. But we're going to cover all of that next with our very special guest, one of my heroes, Massachusetts' own and Nancy's guy, Mr. Stephen John Carell.
No.
Steve? Hey, guys.
Steve.
Hi, Steve.
Bravo.
Steve knows Jen.
Bravo.
Steve, have you ever seen Jen do that I'm new to technology bit where she just presses it up against her nose and talks to Siri like that's going to make it all happen.
I haven't seen that, no.
Thank you for coming.
Thanks for having me.
Wonderful. Our next guest, in your defense, you're busy being professional in your dressing room, learning your lines. You're not mixing.
Oh, you're on the set right now?
Well, when he was working with Jen there on the morning show,
right?
He's not around her when she's asking Siri about the non-important
questions. No, he's preparing.
Exactly. He's working.
Yeah. I'm always preparing.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. Sure.
Are you at work right now, Steve?
Are you preparing now?
No, I'm not at work ever.
Oh, would that be great if he was sitting on the can right now? If he just panned down right now and he's just...
he's working on something else, yeah.
The only place we could catch him for a solid hour.
Steve Carell, good to see you, man.
I'm so glad you're here.
It's so good to see you guys.
How great is that? Steve Carell's on the show, everybody. Pull over, turn your car off.
I'm just sitting here looking because I'm just a fan. I'm an old school, what you just
soak
call like
it in,
fan.
Will.
Yeah, yeah, I am. I'm soaking it in. I just think you're great.
When you died on the morning show, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
I was completely crushed. Like, I was so invested.
Okay.
You weren't supposed to be crushed by my character dying.
I was, though, because you
that
were coming around.
Thing.
Your character was coming around.
You know, a lot of people haven't finished the first season, Sean.
Well, the second season, so there you go.
Oh, second season, sorry.
Well, it was a true spoiler for me right there. I was galloping towards that episode, but I can go ahead and hop that now,
well, I guess. Newsflash, it came out 19 years ago.
Well, but, you know, but I like to wait until a few build up, then I just binge them all.
All right.
What about Arrested Development, Sean? Favorite episode? Son of a bitch.
He's never seen it, Steve. He's never seen it.
I'm out. It's
Steve,
not my list.
Let's get into the really hard-pressing journalistic questions I've got from you. Care of Wikipedia. Hold, please.
Wait, Steve, where are we catching you? Are you L.A.? Are you East Coast?
I'm East Coast. I'm back in Massachusetts right now.
Oh.
Now, I remember years ago you were saying that at one point that you were going to potentially kind of eventually move back there full time. Have you done that?
Well, sort of half time at this.
Yeah.
Probably six and six is probably, I think that's how we're going to do it.
Are you off of work right now?
Like, I am,
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're born in Massachusetts, spent some time there. Is this where potentially you got interested in acting / comedy? If so, was that because you were funny and or outgoing as a kid? Did it all start happening for you there, or was it later?
I wasn't outgoing as a kid. I was pretty shy. I liked to do theater, but it wasn't like specifically my thing, you know. I did a lot of other stuff, but it was fun. But I wouldn't allow myself to ever think of it as a career or a potential career. It just seemed like,
because I remember being in Chicago, you were like, everybody was like, Steve Carell, like you were the god of Second City there. It was like, just the fact that you went through there in Chicago, everybody was like, just thought you hung the moon, as did I.
What is the difference between being shy, because I think I'm kind of shy, but I don't mind being, for instance, I'm very shy to like make a toast or something like that, but I am not shy when the camera's on and I get to play a character or something. Are you similar in that? Because it's hard to correlate or to reconcile being shy and also willing to be in front of the camera. How did that work for you?
I think it's the same for me, because I feel like you can hide behind a character. You can hide behind a performance and dialogue. You can even hide in a way behind improvisation, because it's, you know, you're kind of stepping outside of yourself in a way. Mm. But I think a lot of people are the same way. You know, at my wedding, I got so shy at my wedding, because all of the focus is on you and your, you know, and your wife. And it's weird, because it's just you. There's nothing else.
Did you cry at your wedding?
I didn't cry at my wedding. I was sweating a lot, but I didn't cry.
So the body was crying.
We were married here in Massachusetts. Super humid, super hot that day. And I remember I was pouring sweat. And then Nancy appeared at, you know, down the aisle. And the sweat dried up, and I would, like, my nerves completely went away.
Wow.
It was the craziest thing. Just seeing her as she started to walk down the aisle, I thought, oh, man, this is like...
Did you dance with her?
Definitely. I continue to dance with her to this very day.
Yeah. I love that.
I did not.
You know, because going back to the shy thing, I think a lot of the there's a big misconception. I think Jason was touching on this. If you're an actor, people are like, well, being shy is just an excuse. You just don't want to talk. Like, how could you be scared to speak in front of a large group of people? But it is. It's if something's not written for you, or you can't cultivate a character, it's one of the reasons we're actors, is because it is too nerve-wracking unless that's done for you.
But Willie doesn't have a problem with that. Will, you're never shy away from, you know, making a toast for someone in a very sincere, genuine way, but also being very funny. Yes. Like, you don't have an allergy to a spotlight. I get small.
No, but I might have like a condition.
Yeah.
There's a
I'm
chance.
Glad you said it.
Yeah.
That's good. Let's build on that.
No, let's not. I was thinking about it, reminding me of Steve. Do you know John Glazer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew him.
Jason, you remember Glazer?
Yeah.
And just reminded Glazer's wedding, which I had to miss because we were working. But I remember Amy went and a bunch of, and Glazer was giving a speech at his own wedding and he started to cry. He started to tear up. And John Benjamin and David Cross started going, cry. Cry, cry, cry.
That'll make you feel more comfortable.
I don't know. I haven't thought about that in 15, 20 years.
Steve, again, in this incredible, I don't know if you guys have ever heard of Wikipedia, but it's such a source.
Amazing.
It says here, were you also in Massachusetts when you were the disc jockey at W-Dub, both the handle Sapphire Steve Carell?
No, that was in college.
Okay.
I went to school.
How did we get Sapphire?
Well, the guy, you know, you have to intern under somebody when you first join the college radio station.
And which was where? Where were you for college?
I went to Denison University in Ohio. Yeah. And
listen, that's a family name. My son's name is my youngest son's name is Denison, Alexander Denison.
Really?
And we call him Denny, yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
It's
anyway, sorry.
No. I was interning under this guy who called himself Diamond Doug McKenney. And so the first time he allowed me on the air.
He sounds very good.
I just was kind of blowing him some shit. And I said, this is Sapphire Steve Carell. And he didn't think it was that funny.
Wait, Steve, what kind of music did you play when you DJ'd?
Mostly Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
Anything really
that's a
long,
genre.
really long songs. Because I had, you know, as a freshman too, you get the worst shifts. So I was on from like 5 to 7 in the morning.
Okay.
And we will be right back.
We get support from Happy Egg. I love starting my morning off with farm fresh eggs full of flavor. At Happy Egg, all of their hens roam on 8 or more acres of land, leaving no mystery to why their eggs are the best. These hens are raised on 8+ acres. I got to keep it down because if my hens find out, they don't have 8+ acres. My hens only have like 3/4 of an acre. And they're going to go on strike. Anyway, all of their hens are cared for by small family farmers and live their best hen lives day in and day out. All of this results in eggs with plump orange yolks that are full of flavor. I just, as I mentioned, I like to kick off my morning with farm fresh eggs. The difference is so glaring between an egg from Happy Egg and an egg that just came from clearly some kind of like sad factory. And you just have to taste it for yourself. If you're a fan of eggs, which I am, do yourself this favor and try Happy Egg eggs. You will not be disappointed. You will notice the difference immediately. Get with the Happy Eggs. They're so good. Next time you're at the store, look for the yellow carton. Choose Happy with Happy Egg. Visit happyegg.com/smartless to find a store near you. And if you come by the house, don't mention it to my aunts. Thank you to one of our new sponsors, My Mochi Ice Cream, for supporting the show. I just discovered cookies and cream, My Mochi Ice Cream, and I'm a little obsessed, but I'm a lot obsessed. Do you not know what My Mochi Ice Cream is? Picture this. It's a perfect little scoop of rich, creamy, premium ice cream wrapped in the softest, sweetest dough known to mankind. My Mochi Ice Cream is sweet, it's chewy, it's cool, it's creamy, all at the same time. It comes in tons of fabulous flavors like strawberry, mango, cookies and cream, and double chocolate. That cookies and cream, I've always been a cookies and cream fan, but then when I had the My Mochi, oh my gosh, I mean, I was like, my mouthy loved it, first of all. An absolute knockout. Each box of My Mochi ice cream has 6 perfectly portioned mochis that are gluten-free and about 90 calories each. You can find My Mochi at Target or go to mymochi.com to find your nearest grocery store. Discover the cool, creamy, joyfully chill sensation of My Mochi ice cream today. We get support from Canva. When your work, presentations, and docs look good, you look good. And you can design stunning work presentations, docs, whiteboards, and videos with Canva. Canva is an easy-to-use online design platform. It helps people design compelling visual content and is great for designing any type of presentation and great for any teammate. So our team at Smartless is using Canva when they're coming up with different design concepts for various things with related to Smartless and Smartless Media, because we have a lot of stuff going on. It's a busy crew, okay? And if it wasn't for Canva, they'd all be fired. Supercharge your work with AI-powered Canva presentations, docs, videos, and more. In just a few seconds, you can generate slides and text from a prompt. AI is built into Canva right where you work, so you can stay on task without any app switching. It's AI that's easy to learn and even easier to use. Whether you work in sales, marketing, HR, ops, and more, Canva is perfect for any work task. Sales decks, hiring docs, marketing brainstorms, employee videos, you name it. Anyone at work can design with Canva. Start designing today at canva.com. Designed for work.
And now back to the show.
So, Steve, so walk me through a little bit. You're from sort of the Boston area, and you go to Denison, and then what's the move? How do you end up doing going to Chicago and getting into Second City? Like, because it's a question that kind of comes up with people in comedy, and especially people who go yeah. through Second City. What was that moment for you? Like, yeah, I got to go to Chicago, or that's for me. Or
well, I was working as a postal carrier in Massachusetts.
Yep.
Really?
You left yeah. because you were too slow or got fired because you were
terrible.
Too slow.
Yeah. Well, I left because two buddies of mine from college said, hey, let's go to Chicago and we're going to start an educational theater company.
This is post-college.
I had gone back to Massachusetts living with my folks, got a job as a mail carrier.
Wow.
Was trying to put some money away to make some sort of move eventually. I didn't know where. Yeah. And they said, we're going to move to Chicago, get an apartment, and just try our hand at theater on the side. We'll create this educational theater company. We'll make some money and perform for kids on the side. And I was in. And that's how it happened.
So, but you go to Chicago to do this educational theater, which, by the way, pre-yawn. And then you get there. Fuck me, man. Yeah. I mean,
I'm still stuck on the money earning career as a postal worker and then an improv artist.
If you and I had been friends in high school and you had said to me, hey, I'm going with those other guys, you wouldn't have made a fucking dime in your life because you would have never left. I would have been like, are you out of your fucking mind? You're not going to fucking Chicago to do fucking Steve, get a fucking grip. Hey, Carell, you guys see what fucking Carell wants to do? Shut the fuck up, dude. So you're lucky you did go because it worked out well. But how did you go do that? And then did that fall apart and you just saw a sign for Second City, like out of a movie? Like, hey, there's my calling.
Well, that was always the ultimate
it
plan.
Was.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I really wanted to go to Chicago to do improv and to try to at least take classes at Second City and to do plays. You know, at that point, I wasn't thinking specifically comedy because I didn't think I was that funny. You know, that really didn't seem like my forte.
Well, that makes sense because your ability, and this is why I said right at the beginning that I'm such a fan, you know, during these last couple weird years of this worldwide disaster.
What happened?
I've watched all of The Office and I'm just even further in awe of what you do. And there's so much of it is because you're such a great actor. Yeah. There are a lot of people who are really funny, but you are truly both in such a profound way. And
yeah, that's really true.
Yeah.
Really true.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there it is, guys. No. Steve Carell, Dime Sapphire Steve, and we've had a great time.
It is true. No, your humor always comes from the depth of the character you have, like, the stones to pull off.
You're Michael Scott. There was so much pathos there. There was so much of it coming from a real place in such a way that I think connected with people. And certainly, I don't know, I just loved it. And I think that... you're very believable as a, you're just a great actor. I don't know.
I was going to ask you, like, was there any nervousness or apprehension to take over the office after the British office had so much critical acclaim and was you know, talked about and buzzy and all this stuff? But I would imagine that you found comfort in the fact that what Ricky Gervais does so well is play that character.
Tell him what he found comfort in.
He played that comfort or that character with so much sort of melancholy and drama that, in other words, it wasn't funny to him at all. You know, no one's, he'd kill somebody if he heard them laughing at him. So did you think, I can play that kind of funny, like no winking, I got it.
Well, that's what I find funny in general is, you know, a character in a comedy doesn't know they're in a comedy.
Right.
And the same goes for a drama. You know, you don't know what the circumstances are of your story, your own story is, you know, as a character.
Yeah.
So when
people don't know they're crazy.
Yeah, exactly. You know, drunk people don't really know they're as drunk as they are. So right. You kind of play against it, you know, and I think the same goes for comedy. It's really off-putting to me whenever I see someone, like you said, winking at the camera or kind of acknowledging how funny they are being in the moment. That always pulls me out. I always think about somebody like Peter Sellers who did the most outrageously broad characters and never let on that he thought he was doing anything even remotely funny.
Right.
That anybody was watching him, you know, that there's no audience. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I love that. But I think that's, you guys do exactly that same thing. I mean, I think I'm fans of all of yours for that exact reason. You know, you never see it. You never see sort of pandering or nice winking at an audience.
Well, Jason does a lot of winking off camera, but I will say
it's just to get the
job.
And
it's a little, it's alarming. I just want to say it's alarming. It's unsettling. But Steve, I want to sort of, because I know that Jason sort of brought up, and I'd heard, and I think that you've said before, like you actually, of course, you knew about Ricky's Office, the UK version, but that you didn't want to see it because you wanted to do your own thing, which I think is really fabulous.
Is that true? Did you not see in The Office before you?
I've never seen it. I've never seen the UK version.
So still to this day.
No, not to this day.
Which makes total sense. And I think it's really such an even a further testament to your, you know, your talent. And you know, we were such big fans of the UK version. And we were, you know, and we're friends. And Ricky's a very good friend. And I am able to like each of them for very different reasons. And I love both versions. And honestly, I just think that I want to once and for all just sort of like put that out there that you not only did you not watch it, you've never watched it, which is phenomenal.
Well, I watched, I take that back. I watched, just for a frame of reference, I watched about maybe 3 minutes of an episode before I auditioned. And I knew instantly that I couldn't watch it because he was too good. Because if I watched any more, I would want to just duplicate what he was doing.
Right. I understand.
Brilliant. That was hilarious.
Do you want to hear something that will make you all sick in your mouth? And this is a true story. When I said yes to Teen Wolf 2, I made a concerted choice to not see the original Teen Wolf because I didn't want to be tempted to rip anything off from Michael J. Fox.
Sure. No, it's so smart.
And I wanted to be able to say that my version was completely, you know, just, you know, cooked original. Up internally.
Yeah. Did that ever come up?
Still to this day, still have not seen Teen Wolf.
Did that ever come up at any of the Q&As at the Directors Guild?
They kept canceling those, and I got weird excuses for that. I'm not sure what was behind it, but yeah, never ended up doing any of those. But I did tell a bunch of people to junket this story, and didn't get a lot of response back.
Love that more than Kyle Gass is going to love that more than anybody. He's a big fan.
Steve, do you have siblings, by the way?
I do. Three older brothers.
Would you like to get rid of them? Sorry.
What?
Would you like to get rid of him?
That's Will's classic follow-up to the sibling question.
No, they're fantastic.
But you are the youngest or the oldest?
I'm the youngest.
You are the really? Youngest.
I'm yeah. the youngest of four boys as well.
Oh, really?
Yes. And did you, any of them interested in the business you're in?
No, not at all.
Did you get your ass kicked quite a bit, Steve?
No, it wasn't. No, it wasn't like that. No, I was like 5 years younger than my closest brother in age. So I was always kind of the baby. So they always kind of protected me.
Oh, nice. I've got a couple of other Wikipedia hot tidbits here.
Steve, did you ever consider, sorry, just a DJ name. Did you ever consider Baby Steve? Because it's a different, it invokes a different thing.
It wouldn't please Diamond Dave as much. Was it Diamond Dave?
Sapphire Steve.
Can I do my Baby Steve DJ voice?
Yes, please.
It's time to listen to Stairway to Heaven.
I can hear him turning off already. Now, is it true here that you played the fife?
Oh my God. Yeah.
Okay, I do a lot of research. What is the fife?
What's the fife?
The fife is essentially a flute that they would use during Revolutionary War times.
Sure.
And I was.
So it was when you were doing reenactments, is when you would.
I was part of a fife and drum corps. Yeah. In the Acton. Boy.
And then you would take time off from that to just, you know, get laid all the time?
So it's not a piccolo and it's not a flute, it's a fife.
It's sort of, yes. It is an old timey piccolo.
Let's and just doubling way. Back to the radio thing, the WDUB, that's W-Dub. Can I hear right. you just bark out the call letters once for us?
This is Sapphire Steve Carell on WDUB.
Never W-Dub?
No.
Huh.
I think they might call it Dub now.
W-Dub.
Oh, my God.
All right. Last on this interesting list here God. Is that you were, and Will, just strap in for this, pal, okay?
This is
in fact, Sean and I can take a break here.
Yeah.
You were a goalie on your school's hockey team, the Big Red, for 4 years.
Uh-huh.
True? Yes? Will, go ahead. Let's talk goalie technique. And
I was a goalie too, Steve.
I didn't know you were a goalie.
Yeah. And hockey, I played goal in hockey. Yeah, growing up.
Where would guys get the puck past both of you most easily? What was your loosest hole?
Steve and I were both old enough that back then the guys didn't play much. They didn't play in the butterfly style as much as they do now. So it was a lot more stack in the pads, right? Remember the stack in the pads?
Here they go.
And it was all angles. It was all angles. Like coming way out of the net to cut down the angle.
And no face mask back then, right?
No, hey now.
Hey.
But we did, Steve, you know what's great? I don't know if you feel the same way when you watch those old, I imagine you're a Bruins fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's unfortunate, but you know, there's a lot of those old videos of like Jerry Cheevers, you know, for the Bruins, let's say, or Billy Smith for the Islanders, and they came out so far that the guys would make one move, and then they'd have a yawning net because the goalie's like 30 yards out of the net.
Yeah, and I was told you have to learn how to skate backwards really well. So if you could skate backwards as fast as they were skating forwards, and you move back with them, but still
you can come way out.
It's impossible. The game has changed so much. The equipment is different. What was your Will? What was your weak spot? Like where was like blocker side?
Probably blocker side.
Like high blocker side. That was always tough.
Well,
it's tough
yeah,
for all of them.
I think it's tough for all of them, and also below the block, like in that I don't know, what do they call it now? They call it the six hole or the seven hole,
seven?
Like under the arm on that side.
Yeah, that's. I think that's pretty tough. If you're pretty, you can beat a lot of goalies right in there on the special.
Great,
anyway, Sean,
real good.
Hey
Sean,
guys, we just lost. They're bringing the paddles in to revive Sean.
Sean, ask him if he ever auditioned for SNL coming out of Second City. Go ahead.
No, I want to ask. Can I just ask one quick question about growing up? Because I think it's fascinating. Because in a group like that, first of all, what is Carell? What is your nationality?
Italian.
Okay.
It's derived from Caroselli.
Oh, like a carousel?
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah, like a carousel.
Around and
or
around?
Kerosene or something. Shut up, Sean. God.
Really? like a carousel.
Okay, so wait. So you're interested in theater and second city and all that. What do your brothers think of that as you're growing up? Like, are they like, that's for sissies, or are they encouraging?
Well, it's just one of a bunch of different things that I did, so it wasn't. I don't know. They didn't give it much thought. I don't think they really cared. Like, oh, Steve's in a play.
That's so lovely.
You know, we'll go see that.
That's so lovely. I didn't tell anybody I was in the high school play because I was nervous to let them know about lots of things, but that I was in theater because all of my brothers are football, baseball, massive sports guys. And I remember I came home from a performance of Bye Bye Birdie at my high school, and my brother goes, hey, I know you're in the play. I'm like, I freaked out. I was like, you do? He goes, yeah, I'm in football. We wear makeup too. We put the black stuff under our eyes. It's cool. Everybody wears makeup.
See, he was trying to give you a green light, saying it's okay. Yeah. Let us know, Sean.
Yeah.
Now, in your school, Sean, was there like a huge delineation between like athletics and art and theater and that sort of thing?
There was. I mean, we had a couple people cross over from... And when I say a couple, I really mean like maybe one or two from the sports into the theater. But it was mainly, a lot of it was it's probably more integrated now.
Yeah.
What about you, Steve? Was it?
It was a small school, so everybody kind of did everything. Dabbled in everything. So there wasn't a built-in stigma to any of it. And
yeah, that's good.
I actually directed a melodrama and cast everybody from the hockey team. and guys who had never been on stage before. And it was one of the funniest things.
That's great. That's how it should be.
Yeah, it was really, really fun.
What did your folks think when you were like showing an interest? What kind of stuff, what kind of line of work were your parents in? Like,
My mom was a psych nurse.
Okay.
She worked the night shift at a hospital.
Wow. Ooh, I bet you she's got great stories.
Oh my gosh. She did it for like 40 years. It was a lot, you know. I have so much respect for what she did, and
sure,
really worked very hard, and she was good at her job. My dad was an engineer.
Did you talk to her at all about the patient at all? Is she still with us?
She's not. No, she passed away about 5 years ago.
Oh, I'm sorry.
But I think a lot of what I learned from her, I've implemented. In that.
Yeah. Into the patient, which is your new show on FX acclaim.
Wow. I play a therapist in it. So I think I gleaned a lot of stuff from her when I was growing up.
Is that one of the reasons you took the role, is because it was so close to what you, close to what your mom had taught you?
In part, I just find that world fascinating.
Yeah.
And mostly though, it was the creators, the guys who did The Americans. And I'm a huge fan of that show.
You were going to say that she never talked?
She never talked about anyone because, you know, we lived in these small towns.
Right.
She worked in Concord. We lived in the next town over. So she never talked about anyone that she was treating or talking to.
Oh, my God. She told me so many things.
But Steve, is that at the risk of maybe seeing them at the Stop and Shop? Or
exactly. I mean, professional courtesy, obviously. Yeah. But in terms of what she did, you know, we talked a lot about that and the types of people that she was treating and caring for.
And to have empathy for, no matter how sick or broken somebody might be, yeah?
Yeah.
Reminds me of my personal favorite performance you've done thus far, John DuPont in Foxcatcher. A fellow who clearly didn't have his feet completely underneath him, but you played him with so much, like, I don't know, like any good villain, you should feel some empathy in a sort of an unsettling way for them, and you're just able to do that. Were you as furious? I know your answer. You won't answer this. Were you as furious when you didn't win the Oscar for that? I thought, my God, it's over. It's done. As soon as I saw it, I said,
so
everyone's
good.
Playing for second now.
By the way, you and Channing should have both won. Seriously.
Oh, Channing and Mark were both
everybody.
Fantastic.
No one touched you in that film, Steve. You leave them alone. You took that and this was before, I mean, Bennett Miller, what did you have an incredible meeting with him? I mean,
he called me. He called me out of the blue. Like,
what a great eye he's got.
I'd never met the man. I was a fan of his work, but my agent called and said, you know, he wanted to talk to you about a project. So it's one of those moments you think, what is this about? What's going on? Like, how would I even possibly be on this guy's radar?
Yeah.
And he laid out what he was looking for, and I just joined it instantly, you know, the chance to do something like that.
Was that kind of vision in you and faith in you terrifying, or did it give you the kind of encouragement that you wanted and needed in order to play that part, you know, that someone saw it in you before you even thought about it maybe?
I don't know how you guys feel about, like, when you take on parts or get jobs. If you're a little, and it's, I think it sounds like a cliche at this point, but if you're a little uneasy about it, if you're a little scared, I think that's good.
Yeah, sure. You work harder. Yeah.
I think so. I think it's like that unknown, that quality of, because if you go in thinking, oh, I know how to do this from day one, but like, why do it?
Right.
If you really think you've got it always figured out.
Well, I was going to say too, that kind of goes back to what we were saying before about being shy or not, or performing or not. The truth be told, and I know I can act like a pompous ass a lot of the time.
Will.
And seemingly not shy or whatever. I have a lot of moments where I think, like, jump or don't, and especially when it comes to, like, doing things and saying things and stepping out, you know, with, like, improv, like, stepping out. And my instinct that always just tells me to just do it and to just go for it and be uncomfortable and who knows what's going to happen. And I feel nervous, and just to embrace that nervousness. So I am nervous quite often, and I just try to use it and or embrace it.
Yeah, because I also find that courage lives on the other side of trying. You know, it's like you don't expect courage before you actually
go for it. Headstorm in my grave.
Yeah, I totally agree. I mean, I think that's what's exciting about it. And that's when you find new things. And if you don't know you can do it, I think that's good.
Yeah.
Or if you fear that you can't even, that's, give it a shot.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. Hey, SmartLess listener, we get support from Viator. You know, Scotty and I took a vacation many years ago. We geeked out because we liked the movie Amadeus, and we went to Austria, and it was fantastic. We went to all Mozart's kind of hangout places, and I know, total nerdville, but it was pretty cool, and I absolutely loved it. It will always be one of our favorite memories of vacationing, so maybe one of the most perfect experiences we've ever had traveling. And so next time you're looking to plan the perfect trip like that, an experience, check out Viator. Viator is a tool you can use to plan and book travel experiences around the world. Their app and website make it easy to explore 300,000 plus travel experiences, so you can discover what's out there no matter where you are traveling or what you are interested in. Feel better about your travel decisions by checking out real traveler reviews to get the inside scoop from others who have already checked out the experiences. Viator offers 24/7 customer service, so you know you'll get support at any hour if things aren't going as planned. Plus, free cancellation to help you plan for the unexpected. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find the perfect travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator. From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes Challenger, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya stars as Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who has taken her husband Art and transformed him into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt him out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when he finds himself standing across the net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Past and present collide and tensions run high. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26th. Get tickets now at ChallengersMovie.com.
My dad works in B2B marketing, but I never really knew what that meant. Then one day, my dad came by my school for career day and told everyone in my class he was a big ROAS man. Then he just kept saying things like, the bigger the ROAS, the better, over and over. My friends still laugh at me to this day. I think it means calculating a return on ad spend. One thing's for sure, I'll be known as the ROAS man's kid for the rest of my days. Why couldn't you just be a fireman or a lawyer? Why? You ruined my life, Dad.
Not everyone gets B2B, but LinkedIn has the people who do. And with ads on LinkedIn, you'll be able to reach people based on job title, industry, likelihood to buy, and more. Start converting your B2B audience into high-quality leads today We'll even give you $100 credit on your next ad campaign. Go to linkedin.com/smartlist to claim your credit. That's linkedin.com/smartlist. Terms and conditions apply. LinkedIn, the place to be.
Behind every successful business is a story, and some of them might surprise you, like how Chobani's first yogurt factory was discovered on a piece of junk mail, or how the founder of the multi-million dollar cosmetics brand Drunk Elephant was told by everyone, including her own mother, that the name sounded like a dive bar. I'm Guy Raz, and on my show How I Built This, I talk to founders behind the world's biggest companies to learn the real stories of how they built them. In each episode, you'll hear entrepreneurs share moments of doubt and failure, and talk about how they were able to overcome them on their way to the top. How I Built This is like a masterclass in innovation and creativity from the people who've done it all. Follow How I Built This wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to How I Built This early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. For more deep dive and daily business content, listen to Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more, Wondery means business.
All right, back to the show.
Let me ask you this too, because I can say it. I know you won't. You've completely conquered comedy. Everybody knows it. You're brilliant at it. And so, are you always actively seeking things that aren't funny, things that challenge you a little more, because you know that you've kind of conquered that area already?
Not really. It's weird to even talk about like what I choose to do, because I still feel like how am I employed? I'm sure, and you could tell with you guys too. It's like being so thankful for even getting to work is really sure. cool. But no, I've never like kind of picked and choose. I don't have a good sort of broad view of where my career is or should be going. Yeah. It's just kind of
gig to gig.
Kind of, yeah. Like trusting your instincts. If it's something like those guys, I really wanted to work with the guys who did The Americans.
Yeah.
Nancy and I fell in love with the show. I fell in love with Ozark as well. If I ever get a chance to work with any of that team, my God. Like that's what drew me to it. And I thought it may not be good this time, but just to get a chance to work with people like that.
I'm such a big fan of so many people in this business. If any one of them ever called me, it wouldn't matter how big or small the role is, what the money is, where it shoots, blah, blah. It's just that's the big influencer on me on what I choose to do, to the extent I have a choice. If you're like me, you basically take everything you're given. There's not a lot of jobs that overlap where it's like, this one's in conflict with that one. I got to pick. It's either yes or no. I'll just stay unemployed for a while.
Yeah.
Going further into your incredible
tighten the gaps on this.
We're gonna pull that one up right there. Going into your canon of incredible roles, let's go to the other side into comedy. Let's go to 40-year-old Virgin, where if I might be right or wrong, that you co-wrote, co-created that was an idea with you. If that is correct, when did that first idea of the 40-year-old Virgin come to you? Aside from perhaps the obvious answer?
I
don't know.
It's not me.
It's okay.
No, it's a little me.
It's a little. It's like the 30-year-old Virgin.
It's, I don't know. You know, it was a sketch that we tried. I kept trying. You know, it was a Second City sketch. I kept trying to get it in a show. And it was, I was like, you guys,
that's funny.
I have this idea. And it was essentially in the 40-year-old Virgin. The seed of the idea was the poker sequence when this guy gets invited out by his working, you know, not buddies at that point, but coworkers, and they're all regaling each other with these tales of sexual conquest. And he doesn't have any context, hasn't done it, doesn't know how to talk about it. And he starts to improvise the most ridiculous things about like what it feels like to touch a woman's breast and, you know. And he's just way, way wrong. And they call him out
cringy.
On it. So that, after I did Anchorman, Judd Apatow said, if you ever have any ideas, you know, I'd love to meet with you and you can pitch anything you want to me. So I went in and I pitched a completely separate idea for about an hour. And he was like, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. Yeah, let's keep talking about it. So it kind of went nowhere. And as I was walking out the door, I said, oh, and there's this other thing, 40-year-old virgin. I gave him like a 20-second pitch. And he looked at me and said, that I can sell this weekend. Like, he was on it instantly.
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's
wow.
how that came together.
Such a great idea.
That's great. Now, was Anchorman on the page, or did you come up with a lot of that on the day as far as the style of that character goes?
I think a lot of it was on the page. I never want to take credit for, like, The Office. The writing of that show was so fantastic. And there was some improv that went on, but you know, you just, you have to give credit. Like, Adam McKay is such,
he's amazing.
Such a funny dude.
Yeah.
And half the improvisation, it was him. Like, yeah. You know, behind the camera, just yelling stuff out that we should say. And then we say it and we get credit for saying it.
But the credit you do deserve to take is you have a very keen sense of what your funny is and what your funny isn't, in that you have such an ease into vulnerability and cringe-inducing embarrassment. Like, there is, you're not afraid to pull your pants down metaphorically, and you put that in a lot of your characters, which is just, it's so courageous and so hilarious. Even when you're playing a guy who's arrogant, it's just so wafer thin. And it just kills me. And I don't know if you can write that, is my point. It's like, it's in the eyes. There's a vulnerability, a generosity of spirit that you have with your character.
My internet may be going out, but still all I talking. Heard, because it was kind of choppy, was just, yeah, pull your pants down and it's wafer thin. How do you respond to that, Steve?
Wait, Steve, did you have any other, like, sketch ideas from Second City that you wished would have become
And you want to pitch
movies?
Them to now, and we'll cut them out. If they're really good, we'll cut them out and we'll sell
and we'll
them to
double
Universal,
back to
okay?
the answer on mine.
No, you know, it's... And I'm sure you guys look back at stuff that you did that you think, boy, that at the time you're thinking, this is really working. And
yeah.
You reflect on it 20 years later and you think, that's just the worst. I did a song, I did a song parody of Bobby McFerrin's Don't Worry, Be Happy.
Uh-huh.
And I wrote a song parody for one of our shows that was Don't Worry, Be Affluent. As sung by Dan Quayle. And it was the worst. It was so bad.
Oh, that's
and
so good.
Obvious.
That's a funny idea.
And at the time I thought, audience, I mean, got in a show, audience is loving it.
You're welcome.
And and there was no wit to it. It yeah. was, it vaguely rhymed. It was terrible. So no, there was just, there's a lot of stuff that deserved to be left on the chopping block, I think.
Okay, yeah. So they did, those are the ones that deserve to be left on the chopping block. What's the thing, the idea, the thing that never got made or that you yeah. had in development at the studio? Did you ever have an idea or a movie that you're like, God damn it, that I'm sure none of your stuff got put into turnaround, but I had like three or four things that I have never been made that to this day, I still think that would be the funniest. One thing that Mike Schur and I,
the ambassador, remember the ambassador
years ago?
Oh, really?
Yeah, the ambassador, we sold to DreamWorks and that's still there. And I'm like, it's brilliant. Obviously Mike Schur is a brilliant writer and you know him well,
great.
But do you have any of those things of like, oh, I wish this thing.
Well, Tina Fey wrote something that I wish we had gotten to do. It was called Mail Order Groom, and it's about a woman who works at a video store. This is how old the idea was. Who it basically flies to Russia to marry this guy, like a mail order groom. She sees this. I don't even remember how it all starts, and I'm the mail order groom.
Sure.
And so she brings me back to the United States essentially to get one of her coworkers jealous.
Did he have the Gru accent?
It's all the Gru accent. I mean, that's, yeah, I'm sure if we'd done it, it would have been Gru. And
God, it's so good.
And obviously we end up kind of warming up to each other and eventually falling in love. And there's a, actually, Will, you were you were who we were talking about to play the immigration agent.
No kidding. He sounds interesting.
Like if it had gone, you were like first on our list to play, you know, the guy who's like,
well, let me check. Yep, I'm available. I mean, I'm just saying,
let's fire this up,
Steve. Let's get this going. Steve, I don't need a commitment out of you now. All I'm saying is if I get this off the ground with Tina and you, and obviously we'll update. It's not going to be a video store. It'll be at a TikTok conference, but is where she works. But I'm just saying, don't rule it out.
Steve, I want to ask you a question. When you travel back and forth, so you said 6 months on, 6 months off in each coast.
Yeah.
When you go back to LA after being on the East Coast in Boston, which is so different, is there a culture shock? And what are the things you noticed that you didn't notice before having now made the move and having time away? Anything?
I think the main thing is that when somebody sees me in a supermarket here, they give me shit. They're like, hey, Steve, don't get cocky, huh? And but they're very sweet about it. Like, hey, that new show, all right, don't get cocky.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Whereas in LA, you'll find a script in your shopping cart.
it's a little different.
Yeah.
But yeah, the people, I think they, well, generally know that I'm from the area. So
sure. Yeah. I just didn't know if you got back to LA, if you were like, oh, I forgot about this. I forgot about the way this is or that is or this person is or that person is. Because in Boston, I don't get that.
It's just, it's very sleepy back here. That's the main difference.
I find that Boston, I have obviously Amy's from Boston. I've spent a lot of time up there. And I have my own lifelong love affair with the people of Massachusetts. And I always like the... oh, look at you. Must be nice, huh?
The must be nice,
which is so good. You're in California now, huh? Must be nice. Look at you, Steve. Steve, you're doing all right, huh? Must be nice. All right, I got to go. Hey, we've just run out of Snapple and cigarettes. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, there's a built-in familiarity. And,
yes.
And they don't, and generally, it's there's not a lot of lingering. It's like a glancing blow. Like, hey. You know, I know you. See you later.
Right.
And that's it.
Yeah, right.
Hit and run.
There's a sweetness. Sean, do you remember you and I auditioned for a movie at the same time?
Uh-oh.
Oh, that's right. Down with Love.
You were like the nicest. I mean, and our paths really haven't crossed much, but I remember how in awe I was of you during
that's
that
very sweet.
Time.
And I of you.
And now he's much more just in awe. Of you, you know what I mean?
That's very kind, Steve Carell. Thank you. I feel the same way
do
about
you. Do
you
remember that?
I do remember that. I do remember seeing you. I felt the same way. I was like, oh my God.
You were so nice.
Steve, what do you do? What do you do other than, because we like to ask people, what do you do other than being just super talented and working on tons of stuff? Do you still play hockey? Do you have any hobbies? Do you play golf? Do you play tennis? Do you play Scrabble?
What do you want the audience not to know about you?
Yeah.
I still play a little bit of hockey
okay.
when I can. I'm in a league. Wow.
But you're not between the pipes anymore.
No, that would be between the really.
But you play like shinny, or do you guys wear full equipment?
Full equipment. Yeah, we have uniforms and the whole thing.
Will, why don't you play in that?
Oh, so it's not just pickup. Yeah, maybe. Can you? Do you guys ever need extras to come skate?
Yes.
I was thinking about coming in to skate again.
Really?
Yeah.
Anytime. I play D.
I'd love to come play.
Can I watch?
For sure.
I'm
really
dead serious.
Fun.
Okay.
Yeah. How
okay.
long does it take to put all that equipment on? How long?
4 hours.
Yeah. And then 8 hours to wash the smell off, right?
My dad's not around anymore to time my skates, so it takes longer.
Sure.
Okay. Did your dad do that? Did your dad help you with equipment?
Dude, I listen, I'm so old that when I grew up in Toronto, that my first team that I played on, Moordale, the rink was at the end of the street, and it was an outdoor rink in Toronto. And I remember vividly getting my fingers were so cold and trying to do up my skates. And I got a little bit of frostbite in my skates, and I came in. I was probably like six or seven, one of my first organized. And I came in, they had to put my feet in they'd had like a tin that cookies come in. They put cold water in because you don't put your feet right into hot water if you're going to have potential hypothermia because it's too shocking. And they put my feet into my grandmother was there with me, I remember. And put them into this thing, and it felt like burning. So I remember all those things of doing up my skates. You remember the skate tighteners that had the hook
like
on it?
A little hook.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I remember that. And yeah, my parents used to take me to Saturday mornings. We'd have practice indoor games, and I had a paper route. And I remember having my mom's station wagon with the back down, and she would drive slowly, and I'd run with the insert papers to the different houses, and then to the game at like 6 a.m. And I got to both my folks who are listening, definitely thank you so much. I don't know if I've ever appropriately thanked you for all those early mornings.
Oh,
so thank you.
I know. They sit for hours and
watch.
Yeah.
I had a paper route when I was a kid, and I used to just throw all the pamphlets in the forest and say I delivered them.
Sean, we're going to have a long talk after this.
This has not been a great moment for you.
It's not been great for you.
Okay, the Steve Carell episode for you has been a real fucking low.
Only stick around after this interview.
Okay.
Steve, I'm sorry we're ending on a low note, but you are incredible.
You have been
very generous with your time.
You are a dream.
Please keep giving all your giving, because we'll keep taking and watching.
Yes, for sure.
And thank you for the hour today. And
thanks, guys.
My best to you, your radio career,
Nancy,
your wife, your
kids,
all of it.
And we're going to come up. Steve, I'm going to watch. I can't wait to watch your show. And you've always been we've only met a handful of times over the years, but you're a true gentleman and such a talent.
You start skating together now.
Yeah. And let's skate. I'm going to get your email from these guys.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah. Very, very low pressure hockey. You'll enjoy
it.
It's fun.
Great. Great. Love to.
Thank you, Steve Carell.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you, Steve Carell.
Mm-hmm. Look at that. Look at that. Steve Carell's on the show.
You guys are great. Thank you.
Unbelievable.
God, I wish we had
it's kind of amazing.
I wish we had applause. Let's just give Steve a clap
off. We'll pipe it in.
Let's clap him off.
All right. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, guys.
Bye, Steve.
Pal. Thank you.
Sean.
Now, Sean.
Sean, we have to talk to you.
Now, Sean?
What do you mean about the papers, the pamphlets?
No, it was really with the pamphlets and people who didn't get their newspapers and stuff in all these years. And just a lot of stuff.
How dare you say stuff about pamphlets in front of Steve?
I was like eight years old.
Oh, is that guy top shelf?
He really is.
Man, yeah, he's the best. Man.
Yeah.
We didn't even talk about one of my favorite drama roles he played. Did you ever see Beautiful Boy with Timothée Chalamet?
No,
I never saw that.
Played his son who had an opioid addiction. Oh man, it was heartbreaking.
I couldn't take it. I felt like it was going to be too sad, and I didn't want to watch it.
It was. It was really, really good.
I'm with you about the Foxcatcher. When I saw him blown away.
That
was kind of amazing.
Greg Fraser shot that too. Beautiful cinematography. So
I loved
pretty.
When Jason asked if he cried at his wedding. He said no, but I started sweating. And then Jason said, well, so your body was crying. I've never heard that.
Yeah, well, that's when the body is so, why am I so nervous, the body says. And it starts crying.
Right.
It comes out your pits.
But it is kind of amazing. He's one of the few actors who really kind of crossed over from comedy to drama kind of seamlessly. You know, a lot of people, you know, when I was growing up, a lot of people wanted to be like Tom Hanks. Like, oh my gosh, he was in all those comedies and then he's in all these dramas.
Yeah.
And it's so hard to do that. And Steve Carell is doing that.
I think that Steve is, people are.
And by the way, both you have done that as
well. No, but he hits it. You know, he made the point, which is that I think that people always go like, what is your plan and what were you trying to do? Yeah. And a lot of people like, there is no grand plan. You just kind of go how you go and go with the flow and what happens to interest you at the time.
Yeah.
Or like Mike Tyson said, everyone's got a plan until you get punched in the face.
Yeah, I guess it's like that. I guess it's a little bit
he
like
didn't
that.
Say, did he really say that?
He did say it famously, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah. Larry Merchant said, forget who Mike Tyson was playing. So, Mike, you seem to be in control very early. What was your plan going in? I think it was Evander Holyfield. Seemed like he had a plan right up front there, and then that kind of went out the window. Were you responsible? He goes, yeah, everyone's got a plan until you hit him in the mouth. You know?
Yeah, well, it's some version of that. But the thing, Tyson, first of all, he had those huge shoulders, but he had even bigger biceps.
Bye. Okay, see you guys. I guess that's the end of it then.
Smart.
Smartless is 100% organic and artisanally handcrafted by Bennett Barbaco, Michael Grant Terry, and Rob Armjarf.
Smartless.
If you like SmartLess, you can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts. Prime members can listen ad-free on Amazon Music. Before you go, tell us about yourself by filling out a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
It's all a lighthearted nightmare on our podcast, Morbid.
We're your hosts. I'm Alina Urquhart.
And I'm Ash Kelly.
And our show is part true crime, part spooky, and part comedy.
The stories we cover are well-researched.
He claimed and confessed to officially killing up to 28 people.
With a touch of humor.
I'd just like to go ahead and say that if there's no band called Malevolent Deity,
that is pretty great.
A dash of sarcasm and just garnished a bit with a little bit of cursing.
This motherfucker lied.
Like a liar.
Like a liar.
And if you're a weirdo like us and love to cozy up to a creepy tale of the paranormal,
or you love to hop in the Wayback Machine and dissect the details of some of history's most notorious crimes,
you should tune in to our podcast, Morbid. Follow Morbid on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen to episodes early and ad-free by joining Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.